Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm your host, Kurt, and today we're joined by former NBA and Raptor legend, numero ocho, Jose Calderon. You know, looking forward to this this interview today with a guy that I spent many nights in my living room watching and cheering on in some of the most frustrating years as Raptors fans, and also some of the early days of success with the Toronto Raptors with a few first round exits. But Jose has done so much in his career. He's played with so many amazing teammates. He's been to, he's medaled three times at the Olympics. He's won a FIBA World Cup. He's done so much off the court. So it's going to be such a dynamic conversation. We're going to get into a lot. Today, my partner in crime isn't able to join us. She'll be back with our next episode. So it's a solo edition with Jose and I. Jose, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Kurt. My pleasure.
We're very excited to have you on today, man. You had a very, very exciting, you had a long career, you've played with so many amazing teammates, and you've, stayed very close to the game and life after basketball. So there's lots that we want to chat about. But, before we get into all of that, where are you calling in from today?
I'm from New York. I'm in New York now. I'm in the office, actually. As you guys know, I'm working now as a special assistant to Michelle Roberts. The Players Association. So I'm here in New York, Midtown, 6th Avenue. And this is where I've been living the last year and a half.
And, walk us through that. When you look at that job title, Special Assistant to the Executive Director, what does that role entail?
Actually, it's been a little, never assisted before. So it's the first time we have this role. When I was working out, trying to get back to maybe one more year, I wasn't sure. I was already kind of like leaning into retirement and be more time with the family. I was working here at the office, and Michelle approached me, and she needed some, like a player in the office in a daily basis, in a day-to-day, making decision, talk to every department. So this is what I'm doing. I'm meeting with every department, everything that's going on in the in all our programs and benefits and all the stuff that we have. I'm involved. I'm just giving that player voice. I have my own projects as well, for sure. But yes, just healthcare. I was part of that task force to kind of with the bubble stuff and after with the get back to play. So just involving all those conversations. So it's been an amazing year.
Wow. When I read about it, it said union strategy and voice to the players on specific and relevant NBA issues. So we talk about 2020, it's been a whirlwind of a year. There's been so many things that have happened both in the NBA world, in our world, globally on from a social rights standpoint. When you think about this year and all the challenges that you have, you have faced with this role, how difficult was it getting the NBA season to resume and then getting into the bubble? And then of course, when the players were into the bubble, there was also a little bit of uncertainty at one point where guys were almost ready to go home. And then, of course, we did end up crowning an NBA champ, and now we have another NBA season that's starting in 9 days or in the next 10 days. So, what has that process been like for you?
Well, it was great. Amazing. It was a lot of time, a lot of people working into this, putting all the protocols and talking to players. And the first thing, first things first, safety. Like that was the main, what we were worried about. The cases were going up. We knew that the only way to kind of like keep it the lowest risk as possible, it was going to be a bubble. It was controlling the environment. It was controlling everything we could. And that's what we were trying to build. Like I say, it was a lot of time on the phones and on the Zoom calls and with the NBA and us and trying to get it right. And it was like, the health protocols part and where to play, where the bubble is going to be, the hotels, the logistics. And after the competition part, how many teams are going there? Only playoff teams, 22 teams, 30 teams. So great. It was a lot of like steps. It was a lot of like work in the, on the dark and until it was ready. It was a slow process, but it was an amazing learning process for me as well to work with all these people and be in the other side and see how everything was kind of like taking a form and getting into that bubble. Yeah.
So throughout that process, did you end up getting in the bubble? Were you inside the day-to-day?
Yeah, I was there for 3 weeks. I was there for 3 weeks because I was at some point I moved the family to Spain when they told us like school was going to be online. So I moved everybody to Spain. We came back. I came back in summer and I was 3 weeks there in the bubble. 1 week, actually, it was in a room. As you guys know, when you were traveling to the bubble, you needed a negative test before you get there. And after, you need to stay in a room for 7 days. Only they knock on your door just to give you the food and the test every day for 7 straight days. You got to be there and to be totally clear before you join everyone in the bubble. So, wow. So 1 week there, and after, you know, just got out of the inside the bubble.
Yeah. Wow. And what did you think of the level of play of the playoffs and obviously the NBA finals? What did you think as a former player and now seeing it from this side? What did you think of the level of play?
I think it was amazing. I think basketball-wise, the product was great. I think we got amazing games. I think every team was really competitive. We got a lot of great stories from the Phoenix Sun, you know, going 8-0 and the play-in tournament that, you know, end up being really nice. And after just like, I felt like every game was going to overtime or a tie finish. And it was great. I love it. I enjoy it a lot as a fan. And as a player, I saw guys just ready to play, focus on basketball. It was really good.
I mean, you're used to playing an 82-game season, you're traveling, guys, you know, there's distractions. When you're in a bubble for, you know, almost 3.5 months, there's nothing else to do but play basketball. So,
yeah, you know, and a lot of people are saying, oh, the traveling, you know, it's true, like it takes a toll. I mean, people sometimes as fans, they don't realize how hard it is to travel after games and arriving at 2-3 a.m. in the morning and wake up and go to a shoot around and play the next day again. And that for 82 games and, you know how many nights. It's tough. It takes a toll. It's tough to be 100% every night, but you go out there and do your best every night. I think that for sure was something. You're like 10 minutes away from the core and in a bus ride. So it was really close. Everybody was back in the rooms. But at the same time, it was more. I think even just the traveling aside, everybody got families. I mean, it's not just the traveling. When I'm home, I'm going to take my kid to school and I pick them up and I'm going to basketball or tennis. So I got maybe an appearance with a sponsor that I have to be. And there was nothing of that too. So it was a lot of little things. Wow. That kind of like make you just, like you say, just play basketball. It was tough because, you know, at some point it could be fun to be fishing and going in a boat and go for a walk and a bike ride or whatever. But after, like you say, for those two teams who got to the finals, it was 3 months. So, you know, it was long. That was the part we were worried about. And, you know, but like you say, we crowned a champion. We good, we pass, we got no cases. Here we go. We were right away back to, okay, what we do now, next season. So it was amazing.
You don't think... I always thought of it from the family aspect, but from an endorsement standpoint, you know, when I think about it like that, it's the first time I've thought of it because, yeah, there would be probably opportunities that are lost that you would normally be making extra income, right? So it was a huge sacrifice the players and obviously the entire NBA family made. So now we're going into this new season and talking about your former team and our beloved team, the Toronto Raptors. They are not going into another bubble, but they're going to a completely new city. And you just said, you know, when you're at home, you're sleeping in your own bed, you're taking your kids to school. They're not going to be in their own home. They're now making an even bigger sacrifice. What do you think about, obviously, this is the cards that they've been dealt. This is what needs to happen in order for them to compete. But what do you think the disadvantages they're going to be faced, or some maybe not disadvantages, but obstacles that they'll have to deal with?
I mean, the first thing, just being a parent, it will be, you know, handle the family. And it's going to be a different situation within the team. I mean, the new guys who just signed, they will move to Tampa right away with the family. And Tampa will be, that's your new city. So it will be less stress for those guys. Now, guys who are already there, who already have family, you know, now you got to start thinking what to do. Because we don't even know for how long they're going to be there. We don't know if it's going to be for 3 months, if we're going to be for the whole season, hopefully we're getting better with, you know, worldwide with this virus and we can get back as normal. That's what we all want for sure. But But not even that, we're talking about the players, but what about all the families, the organization? They got to move a lot of people there.
To make it work.
Yeah, all the staff. They've been living in Toronto forever. They have their family, their routines, their kids in the schools. So those are the guys who maybe even more difficult for them to just adjust to this new city. So we know it's going to be tough, but first things first. It's about safety. It's about the protocols that the governments are in place, and we got to follow that. And it's not perfect. I think everybody's having trouble to adjusting to everything, and we got to do it for everyone, for just to be safe.
How do you think it's going to impact guys that are on two-way contracts? Because we still don't know what the G League season is going to be, what it's going to look like. Is there going to be a G League bubble? So those guys that are signed to two-way contracts, do you initially see them spending the majority of their 50, I think they're guaranteed 50 days with the team at the front of the season? Because we don't know where the G League season will be held.
Well, I think, like you say, I think it's going to be, there is a lot, still with the season starting, there is a little, a lot of unknowns. That's why you cannot just think about what's going to happen in the playoffs or what's going to happen with the G League guys. I see, like, because of what's happening with other leagues, I think the two guys, at the beginning, for sure, they have to stay with you and you have to be ready. We don't know if it's going to be cases or no. Hopefully there is no cases. We don't know. There's going to be troubling. There's going to be more movement. So, I think that's the difficult part of this, where we're living at. I think in almost every question, you almost have to answer, I don't know. And you're right. And this is the right answer. Like, I think we're going to have to go, we cannot plan really 2 months ahead. You almost got to go like a week by week and see how we can adjust and how we can do the best way we can to make the players as easy as possible to get this season going. But the two-way guys, I mean, they'll start with the team and after we'll see. Like you say, let's see if it's going to be a G League season or no, or how it's going to be, and how these guys can go back and forth, how they're going to get minutes. Maybe they get more minutes in the NBA right away just because of how things are going.
Could be a better opportunity for them. So, yeah. When you initially joined the union or the PA, it was, it was just going to be a one-year role, and then you were going to help bring someone else in. I'm not sure where that is now, but what do you think's next for you? Do you see yourself staying and working closely with the union? Is it maybe working with a different organization and doing some stuff in the front office or maybe some coaching? What do you think's next for Numero 8?
Well, Numero 8, no coaching. Okay. just because I felt like I need more time with the family. And I'm not saying on the other jobs you don't have that, but I mean, coaches at the end of the day, they travel the same. You got to leave the last one, and you got to prepare when you get home. You almost cannot even disconnect because you got to get ready for the next game. Watch the video and watch the game before. And so there is a lot of hours of that. And I think I owe my family to have a little bit more of flexibility somehow. So I see myself more in this kind of jobs, or maybe a front office, or maybe in a different organization. We don't know. It was going to be a 1 year because we didn't know what to expect. After what happened, it's impossible to just say, okay, I'm done. What I'm going to do? So it's kind of like it was an easy call to keep working together. And I don't know what's going to happen after this season when we finish. I think I'm in a great place. I love it, what I'm doing. I keep learning. And I'm not going to close any doors. Like, I think this is is one of the things, like, as an MBPA, we want. We want players to just come around, to keep learning. And I have the lucky enough to be able to work with every department. So I know about finances. I know about the digital part of tech part. I know the foundation. So I'm learning about everything and kind of like getting better as well, same as what I was doing with basketball. So this is in the process I am. I'm trying to help as much as I can, keep everything and keep learning from all of these people who've been doing this for a long time. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't have I want to be a GM or I want to work on this, on that. I think it's going to be, it's going to be a step by step, and I'm going to keep learning and see what opportunities arrive.
Well, the NBPA's offices there in Manhattan are a great place to work. You've got a basketball court that's, in the building. So tell me, are you taking a break, lacing them up, getting some shots up? Are you guys playing pickup?
No, I was doing it. We were doing it here in the office a couple of times. You know, we did with the office staff after work. You know, some days we just stop by and play. But now, because of everything, we stopped that. We have to stop since March. The office was closed for a long time. We reopen again, but now we're trying to keep that side just for the players because of, you know, all the protocols. This is going to be one of the places the team will be coming. So it's going to be for them. We have to clean up everything after every player workout, after every team workout and stuff like that. So I keep, you know, working out and I keep doing my stuff, but basketball is a little bit aside just because there is not a lot of places. Still in New York, a lot of gyms are still closed for that. So not easy. So I'm watching my son with basketball and the other sports that they do, and that's my job right now.
I see. Well, I appreciate the NBPA and just kind of talking about what you've been doing, and obviously thank you for you, the entire team, all of the NBA family that has been working to make the season work. Talking a little bit about your playing days now, you know, if you go back to even when you were playing professionally in Spain before coming over to the NBA, could you ever imagine or go back and think that this is what your life would become? Having, you know, you played for over 20 years, 14, 15 years in the NBA. Now you're part of the NBA Players Union. Like, when you look back, is this just, you know, did you ever think this would happen? Or is it more like you've just lived it day by day and you're just amazed of what you've achieved?
Yeah, there is a little bit of both. I mean, not really. Like, first thing, I got a call from the NBA. It's your dream. You can, like, make a decision. You come here. But I was always thinking, look, this is an opportunity. I cannot just let it pass. Let me go there. Let me play. Let me do my best. Let's get the experience. If things don't go my side, I'll go back in Spain and keep playing professional. So I was taking it as a experience. Like, let's see. I didn't know I was going to be here for this long and 14 years. And it was amazing. It was great. So I always, like you say, I like to always think not too long term. So I was going always like year by year, trying to get better, what I want to do, what is my next step. And after with this, what happened now is like my last 3-4 years, you know, I wanted to be honest with myself too. And you don't want to be playing forever. So you got to prepare yourself. So I was for sure, you know, during my whole career, I have my businesses, I got my stuff in Spain. I was doing everything I could, but the last 3-4 years, I was just, you know, studying. I did a Harvard thing. I did a couple of college team masters, like doing it online when I was in the plane, when I was in my room. So I was just trying to get ready for after basketball. What I wanted to do, I wasn't sure, but I wanted to be ready. This was something like I didn't expect. Like I say, I was working out, getting ready for just if one of the big teams called just to maybe get another run to a championship. The teams were calling they were like a team with the same role, being a mentor. I was a little bit tired of that, but not tired because of basketball, just because I was missing a lot of stuff with my kids. So, and it happens. So that's why when you ask me about what's going to be next, I mean, yes, I like to be in these kind of roles and keep going, but I'm really keeping it, you know, open. Let's see. So it was everything like a day to day, keep learning, keep working, keep everything, every option. And we'll see what happens. But that was the whole kind of like a process but I couldn't imagine I was going to be working here when I came from Spain.
I know, right? It's I'm sure it's pretty surreal to reflect and think about it. You know, you've played with so many teammates. I think of that 2003 NBA draft with LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. You've played with all of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. And then you think about all the other guys you've played with. It is unbelievable what you've been able to accumulate in just knowledge and experience over your career. Looking at the NBA bubble and seeing LeBron James and at this stage of his career win another championship, obviously you were fortunate enough to play with him. How does that guy do it? I mean, you know, as you're getting older, I'm sure your body doesn't feel, you know, as good as it was when you were in your early 20s. He finds a way and you're like, what is he doing to keep his body in shape and being able to play at this level year after year?
I mean, there is no secret at the end of the day with these big stars, like, they work. I mean, there is nothing else. He's there every day. He works. He's there one of the first ones, he leaves the last one. There is a day off, and he's there at least doing some recovery or some working or some. So there is no days off. I think when the season starts, and his basketball is priority, you know, for sure, like family and everything. But I mean, it's basketball. That's his focus. That's what he wanna be. He wanna keep winning. He gonna keep getting better. And I think all of those guys that in common, they just keep working, keep winning, and he's not just hanging around. So I mean, all of them. It doesn't matter if it's D Wade or is like you mentioned, or Chris Bosh when I was playing with him, or Vince Carter or Dirk Nowitzki, and all the guys I play with. Or you know, it was amazing, and that's what they do. And they even have that talent that some of us, even if you work as hard as you want, you never can get there. And that's something is what it is in every job and every in life. So I mean, that's what they do.
You know, before this interview, I spent countless nights as a Raptors fan in my living room with my dad watching Raptors games. And, you know, in the mid-2000s to 2010s and all of the highs and lows and all of, you know, the great games. And then to see the Raptors win an NBA championship in 2019 and it finally comes full circle. What did that mean to you? You were a real important, intricate process of that franchise growing. And then to see those guys win, you know, Kyle, you saw Kyle early in his career when people didn't know who he was and what kind of player he would be. And now to see him win a championship, what does that, you know, do you feel that you contributed to that 2019 championship?
Well, I mean, I could say I did, but I mean, I was as happy as they were. Why? Because like you say, I spent 8 years of my life there. So other than my home, this is the second place in Toronto where I spend the most of my life. I have so many friends. I still own a house there. There is a lot of people in the organization where I have an amazing relationship. So I was so happy for them because I know how hard it is to win a championship. And how many, like I was eight, there is guys who've been there for 20 or whatever, like working every day to get to that. So I was really happy. And after I got, like you say, Kyle is an amazing friend. Marc Gasol is one of my guys. Like we grow almost together, playing every summer together. Serge Ibaka played with me with the national team. My coach from the national team is there as well. But after I got a relationship with Masai and Larry Tannenbaum and Kevin and Paul from, you know, work with the team all the time. And like so many already, like there is still so many guys who, you know, I work with and they're friends now, that how I cannot be happy for them. Like I was, you know, a smile on my face I think this is the good thing about the sport. Sometimes as fans, we want to win right away and this team is terrible and this move, it doesn't work and this move here and we don't like, and you missing a draft pick or you get something on the draft, on a trade or whatever. I think it's a long run and it is difficult for some teams to go through that. But you see, it works. It works. You do the right thing. You get a little bit of luck here and there and you just do it. And that's what you need. And it's a long process. And we don't know. Hopefully we don't have to wait that long to get another one in Toronto, but you never know. And I think that's the good thing about the sports. There is a few maybe exceptions with big teams and big markets, like maybe they're easy to get some players there or whatever. But at the end of the day, almost everything goes through that. And you just got to be patient and keep trying to get the right formula.
When you have a chance to return, whether it's in Toronto and you're watching a game, you always get a warm welcome. So the love and the city, they definitely appreciate all of the time that you spent there. And you just said it, you know, with all of your friends there, it is always amazing because whether you're popping in, I think most recently before the hiatus, you know, you were at a game earlier in the season. And obviously it's on TV. Everyone is paying homage and respect to you. So how does that feel every time you walk back into that arena?
Oh, you feel amazing. You feel like the first day, how excited I was when I got into the Air Canada at that time center to walk there as a Raptor. And it was amazing. It wasn't my first experience. So that's why I changed everything. Like they helped me even to speak a better English. So, I mean, when I arrived there, like I even couldn't, express myself the right way. And so they helped me with everything. It was amazing. And that's why, you know, it's like family. And that's why I got to be happy with everything. They treat me well. They even booed me a couple of times, but I mean, out of love. And that's why the relationship was there and is always going to be there. You know, like you say, you go highs and lows, and we got an amazing years when we won the Atlantic Division and go to the playoffs for 2 or 3 years. And after Chris Bosh left, and we start over again. So it was great. It was, like I said, I felt I expressed myself. I was myself all the time. I say what I felt. And I think that's the respect I got from everyone and them as well. So it's kind of like go both ways.
Outside of the NBA, you've been part of some special Olympic teams, World Cup teams. You talked about Marc Gasol. People understand how good Spanish players are, right? Spanish league is one of the best leagues outside of the NBA. When you think of that matchup against the Redeem team, you know, and you guys, you know, you have 3 Olympic medals. How close and how much does it, you know, do you guys ever talk that group of brothers about, you know, so close to a gold medal and some of those battles you had with Team USA? What was that experience like over the years?
It was amazing. Now with time, you start realizing like having 3 Olympic medals is more than a dream. These people who like play and work out for 4 straight years just to compete in every Olympic and they maybe never have a chance to get even close. But you know, as a player, as a athlete, just wanted to win all the time because you work so hard. It's tough. I mean, we lost 3 times in US. We got 2 silver medals and we got a bronze medal. I mean, we were so close. And if you really see what kind of teams they have, it's amazing. They're gonna be all of them gonna be Hall of Famers. Like, so it's tough to get all those guys to have a bad game. Like. We stop once here and there, or maybe 2 of them. But after there's always somebody else who came and you know, Kobe once. It was Kobe in 1 game. LeBron, it was Carmelo. It was all those guys playing together. So every time I see the film and pictures, like, I mean, we have an amazing team. We've been winning a lot. And we won a game last summer with new guys. So Spain is still up there and playing amazing basketball, but it's tough to beat the US. I mean, that's the real thing. And like I said, I'm really proud of my medals. Yes, like that, at least 1, you know, just 1. Like, I mean, we didn't want to get all of them, but it was an amazing experience. And I'm really proud of those 3 medals for sure.
You know, you said it, those medals are not easy to come by. So whether it's gold, silver, or bronze, to have 3 is special. When we fast forward to, you know, hopefully the Olympics happen in 2021, Canada basketball has come a long way. You played in Canada. You understand the rise of the game here. The country has diversified. There's been lots of immigration. More and more young people are playing basketball. And now you've seen that correlate to the NBA. We have more and more Canadians playing in the NBA. So Canada might, for the very first time, have an all-NBA roster where all of their players are on an NBA roster. Do you think they pose the biggest threat to Team USA?
I mean, what Canada is missing is just keep working. You cannot just go show up 1 time and win. Like, that's really difficult. It's a process. And like you say, I think you know, Canada got an amazing, amazing team right now. They just got to commit to work for Canada, to represent their country, to go, to really believe like they actually can win. And that's what it is. Like, we've been working together for so long with both Gasols, myself, and a couple of more guys like Rudy Fernandez. We play since we were like 20. And I think that was one of our advantages. Like, we knew each other for so long, but these guys are so young that they could be the next 10 years. They could, you know, they could be playing against US and in every final if they wanted to, because they got the talent to do it. And I think they have to start in, you know, they got to commit and go there and just don't think, you know what happened? And it happened in a lot of situations too. Like, it's your summer. It's not easy to say, I'm going to go to the national team after a long NBA season and be there for a month and a half. So your summer get, you know, so, but, you know, we were ready. We wanted to be there. We have fun because it was like a family reunion every summer. we took that as a workout together to get ready for the NBA as well. Instead of like going to any other cities, like just to play pickup games, we were working out with ourselves. So so that's what we did. And I think Canada got the chance to do that because they're all 20-year-old guys. I mean,
they're young, they're talented. They just need to commit and embrace it.
Yeah, like, I mean, like the good thing about it is like, they just got to start all together now. There is the time for them to say, okay, let's do it. I mean, it's going to take a few years to get together. I mean, like to keep competing and they can win.
They're lucky that they have a coach in Coach Nick Nurse.
They got, like I said, they got the talent and the pieces to be amazing. So I'm excited to see them too, to play all of them. Like, I mean, what a team.
And staying on that topic, are there any, is there a Spanish Luka Doncic coming up that we don't know about? Who's the next Spanish phenom?
We got a couple of guys. I mean, there is a young point guard actually in Real Madrid now. And now that Luka and Campazzo just left for Denver Nuggets, there is a kid called Carlos Alocen. He was signed by Real Madrid this year. He was played in Zaragoza. Young guy, really athletic, really, you know, he's growing up too. And he already played with the national team for a little bit. So he's there. There is another couple of young guys. So we'll see. I think the tough part from Spain was we have so many guys kind of like the same generation. So we all came.
Right.
Well, the two Hernan Gomez came that they're, you know, they're younger than us. And now, you know, the normal part is you're going to have one guy here, one guy 2 years later, and we put in a team together. The weird part about our generation, we were like six guys from like the 80, 81 year. So the bold, you know.
The golden era of Spanish basketball. We need someone. You guys need to pass the torch to the future now.
Exactly. So so now, you know, they're coming in. Like I said, we won in 2019 the world championship. And, you know, Marc Gasol, Rudy Fernandez, and Ricky Rubio stay there from our kind of like, they're younger, but they play with us. So, and that these other guys are joining. So, I mean, we're still pretty good. And we'll see. Hopefully, a couple of more guys are coming this way.
You brought up Kobe Bryant's name, and obviously Kobe's passing this year shook the entire world. There are so many battles on the court with Kobe, so many highlights of you guys competing. What did Kobe Bryant mean to the game, and what did he mean to you?
I mean, it was just everything. I think is the way to how he competed, how he wanted to be the best one every night, how there is no friend on the court. That is, I want to be the best. I want to motivate myself to win this game. That's the matter. If I play against the best team or the worst team or whatever. I think it was about competition, about respect for the game. I think that was amazing. And after I got I was lucky enough to be able to play against US as well and gain that respect. And having him as a teammate with Pau maybe even make us closer in a sense. Like I was saying the other day, like I never have like a coffee with him, but I felt like I got the respect and he was a friend of mine. Because we respect each other on the court. We you know, speak Spanish a couple of times here and there. He visited us when we were in the Olympic Village just because Pau was his teammate. So we talk a few times. So it was amazing how the relationship was built without actually spending time out of in a bar or in a restaurant or outside of the basketball court. And I was lucky enough to was there last year when he played and, you know, exchange jerseys and it was amazing. And we talk a lot. And after when he retired, for me, it was kind of like in the mirror too, because he retired, you know, he kind of like switched right away to family and his businesses and all the things that he had in mind. And so for me, it was kind of like, yeah, this it was great. And after see what happened, you know, it's just hard. So many experiences, like we play. I was there on the 81-point game, my rookie season. So, I mean, and I always say that every time they ask me about that 81-point, everybody was like, oh, bad luck. I'm like, no, that game was amazing. I was in the first row. I was watching something historic, something I don't see nobody doing, 81-point. So we always joke about it with him later every time we play.
Who is guarding him, Jalen Rose?
I got him. You know the best thing about everything when now that you retire, I don't care anymore. They're always my defense was one of my weakest things, when I was getting older. But that game, man, I play different. There is those stats. He got 2 points against me, 1 of 3. So not bad. I stopped him twice. But at that time, you know, I was my rookie. I still was like a pretty athletic and better defensively. But yeah, you know, we all got him. We were winning. I always say the same story. We were winning at the beginning. So, I mean, nobody really cared. Like, he was scoring. That's what he does. He was doing every day. But we were kind of like under control until he was
second half.
He kept scoring. Now Sam Mitchell, you know, started getting crazy, and coach was fun, man, too, after. We couldn't do anything, man. It was scoring every time against 1, 2, 3 or myself, stopping after half court and just shooting a three. It was an amazing game for sure.
I was probably in 10th grade of high school in Toronto. And, you know, it's a late night game. You guys were in L.A. I had school the next morning. So I remember at halftime saying, oh, this is amazing. Raptors are going to win. I turned off the TV. I remember waking up in the morning and seeing the ticker, and it said 81. And that must be a mistake. I couldn't believe it. And I can't believe I turned off the TV and missed the second half, because a historic game. And obviously, as you said, just a guy that, when he wants to do something, nobody can stop him.
No, it was like that. And he scored 60 something in three quarters against, it was the way he was doing it. You know, it was the way, like, he wanted to be better. He wanted to keep getting better, as you know, how tough it is to play 20 years and be a star for 20 years. It's only a few guys who can do that since day one.
And walk off on his last game with 60 points.
I mean, that tells you his mindset, what he wanted to do, how he represented himself, how he saw himself, how he, you know, the values that he had, and why the kids, you know, was looking up at him. He was just like, look, I'm this guy, but when I step on this court, I want to be the best. I want to win every time. I'm going to score against you every time. And after, you're going to have good games, bad games, but I mean, I'm there. You're going to have to beat me. And I mean, that's something.
Did he talk a lot of smack on the court?
He talked to me a few times. I mean,
that's a story for us.
It's always, but it was always good because, like I say, I always respect everyone. There was a few times who players wanted to, you know, trust talk to me or something. Once at the beginning, I couldn't speak English, so I just couldn't answer back. So I mean, guys just get bored of trust to me because I'm like, well, this guy, you know, is so boring, and I was because I didn't know what to say. So. But after, it was just about respect. I'm like, look, I'm just playing here. You can talk whatever you want. I'm just playing. So that was always my way of playing the game. And, you know, I was worried about my teammates and how to do the next play than just talking to somebody. But guys needed that. These guys who need that motivation. But they didn't have it with me.
So when you look at, obviously, Kobe, you look at LeBron, you know, you've been around both of them. What is the biggest difference between the two of them? I mean, they're obviously gifted, talented, they're competitors, but, you know, they are different. Being around both of them, what do you think the biggest differences were?
But with Kobe, the thing, I never been like really, like I was a teammate with LeBron, but with Kobe, it's just because of Pau Gasol, because I played with him so many times and the national team. And so I don't know, that's the thing. I think if you're not a Kobe teammate, it's tough to know how he is on a daily basis. Why? Because when he steps on the court, you just know one Kobe. And he's the Kobe that is going to try to score 81 points against you every day. You know, but from everyone who I talk to, from you know, just talking to him, I mean, it is, like I said before, there is no secret. He was there the first one. He want to beat you even in practice, too, even if you are his teammate. He's going to keep you, like, you know, as motivated as possible. He's going to try to get the best out of you. And that's what LeBron does to you. Like he want to, you know, he's there. And he's if you're going to work, we're working. We're not going to just hang out and just, you know, just do nothing. I think he want to be better. He want to win the next game. He want to win the next championship. And that's their mindset. So that's why I say, like, there is no secret with these guys. Like, they're that good. Just because of a reason, and it's their work ethic. They're willing to sacrifice and be better, and that's all.
You know, the NBA has changed quite a lot since you played your rookie year. I mean, the NBA, the game is different. It's evolved. The money is different. There's social media. When you came into the league, there wasn't social media. Now there is. When you see some of these young guys coming up, I mean, if you were growing up in the U.S. with social media today, how do you think your rookie year would be different? I mean, these guys are already stars before they come in the NBA. How do they manage that at 19, 20 years old, and you're a celebrity before you've even played an NBA game?
Yeah, and I think that's the more difficult part for them. We talk a lot about this, and this is a little bit different in Europe, the way young guys are kind of like develop and get to be great. But here, like you say, I think if you're good even before high school, they already know about you, so they keep following you. And that's adding more pressure. I guess there is a lot of, for sure, more young guys that they didn't make it because they couldn't handle that. Like, you know, maybe you were great at 12, 13 years old, but they already knew about you. There is people watching you. There is the camera doing there. So you get it harder. So for those guys who are able to get to the NBA, I mean, they already have a lot on their minds and on their plate because of that, because there is too much pressure. There is good things about it. There is bad things about it. I think like some of these guys, they're not as prepared and they were before. Why? Because I feel like some of the coaches, because of this social media thing, like they, if you are great at scoring and you're scoring 40, what you can do? Like, are you going to ask the guy to pass the ball or play defense or do this or do that? And I think some of them need to learn a little bit more about basketball than just being an amazing scorer, an amazing talented on that side of the court. So that's why I think the teams should have more development, you know, coaching development and working even more with those young guys, because they need more work just in like a all around kind of like a basketball than just, you know, just the that part of offense or whatever you're good at. So I feel there is a lot of pressure on everybody.
There is. I mean, you talked earlier about you've been preparing for life after basketball. A lot of guys don't necessarily prepare, and nothing in the NBA is promised or guaranteed. It can change in a second. You know, it's no secret that, you know, average NBA player is turning over every 3 to 4 years. So it's so important for these young guys coming in to grow up and mature as fast as possible. But it's also a credit to the veterans or the mentors that are on these teams. People forget that this is a job. You know, like the public thinks that, oh yeah, you're making millions of dollars to play basketball, but it's a job. And everyone thinks that, oh, you're on the team, everyone goes out, they all, you know, support each other and live together. You have a family. A lot of times that these young guys that are coming in, if there's not a strong culture within the organization, there's not guys taking them out for dinner. I mean, you go to practice, you play your game, you go home. Can you explain a little bit about what that process is like of being a teammate and maybe some of the early mentors you had that really helped you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, like where people don't realize, like you say, 3 to 4 years, but to do that, they got to be guys playing 14 like myself or 20 like Vince Carter to get that to a little bit higher. There is at least 60 new guys every year. So that means 60 guys are without a job. Then you know, like this season, these 60 draftees, they're coming. So that means they're going to have a spot in the team. That means that another 60 guys got to go. Out of 450 players, that's a lot of people. Like that rotation, like they're coming. So I think that's one of the things. Like, it is hard to get to the NBA. I think it is harder to stay for a long time in the NBA and actually be a really good, you know, I'm not saying a good player like a star, just be like a, you know, 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 years in the NBA, just because of that. Like, you got to really work really hard. You got to be in the right situation. You got to do the right things. You got to, you know, take it, you know, the opportunity arrives, you got to be ready for it. So there is a lot of things you got to, you know, maybe they're even out of your control, because what you got control is being professional, ask questions, get the help you need, because they're going to help you, work as hard as you can. And even with that, there is no insurance, like say, oh, if you do that, you're going to be, no. Even with that, there's other guys coming. You got to, you know, there is a lot of situations. So like you say, like, you just got to leaning on your work ethic, being the most professional you can, ask questions to your veterans, to your coaches. And like I say, and after having those guys, like for myself, like when I arrived to Toronto, I was lucky. It was kind of like a transition year because after a lot of guys were traded, like Jalen Rose was there and he was traded, but Mopi, Maurice Peterson helped me. Derek Martin arrived to the league to help me. They signed him as a third point and he arrived the first day. I said, Jose, I'm here to help you not to get your minutes, for example. So little details like that, you know, helped you. And that's how you lean on somebody to show you the ropes. And that's what we got to do. That's why this is a brotherhood. That's why the PA is here. That's why all of us are together. And we try to help because we all went the same route. Now, you got to do your thing. You got to work hard. You cannot just say, hey, this, no, because like you say, it is a job and 16 new guys are coming. So you don't do the right things and you don't keep getting better, there is another guy. And after, you got to be lucky, you know, with injuries and situations. So it is tough. It is tough for a lot of guys. And we're here to help them too.
Yeah, you know, there's people wonder, why is Derek Martin signing? Or most recently with the Lakers this year, why is Jared Dudley staying another year? There are more talented guys, but it's how do you comprise that roster to get the best result? Because it's not just about who can put the ball in the net. There has to be guys that play certain roles. So I love to hear that story of, you know, Derek Martin helping you.
Yeah, and because you don't need 15 guys who have scored 20 points. I mean, that doesn't work. You need a lot of so that is where organizations have to make decisions. Like there is always going to be a 14 and 15 guy in the team. Like you maybe don't need those guys to be like a normal in your rotation. You're going to get that, like you say, maybe Jared Dudley is more valuable than having another young guy there because maybe he's not going to play. So why are you going to have that while you have a guy who know how to be ready? If you need a 2 minutes, he's going to get in there. There is no complaints. He's going to get you a three. He's going to be a good teammate. If something goes wrong, he's going to know how to handle those situations. So it's depending on which stage your team at. Like some guys, if you are like one of the young teams, maybe you don't need that much and you maybe need another young guy to keep trying and develop that guy and see if it works or not. And maybe you don't need that many. But even with that, having at least one bed in every position is important to show those guys how the NBA it is. So that's why those guys are so valuable. That's why, you know, I mean, I was on that role a couple of times and it was my role. And you know, there were players better than me at that time. Well, yes, maybe. But what that team needed, you know, go there and work out and help those young guys and be ready in case, you know, somebody was down. I was ready for that. Maybe a young guy couldn't be ready yet. So that's why teams, you know. So, yeah, that's an amazing example, and that's why bets are really important.
You know, just really quickly, as part of the union, you also see the other side of it. Guys that are retired, that have been removed from the league for a long time, like the union plays such an important role. And for guys who are in the NBA, getting to certain milestones means so much more for them in retirement. Can you speak a little bit on that? And I think, you know, once you're in the league, maybe it's 5 or 6 years, there's differences in benefits. There's differences, obviously, in minimum contracts. But life after basketball, the union provides so much value to those guys. And if you're only in the NBA for 1 or 2 years, you may not have those same benefits.
Yeah, there is a 3 year kind of like that is really important to at least get, you know, a lot of those benefits kind of like a start working for you. But even with that, even if you imagine you're not in the league with, you know, like you say, 1 or 2 years or whatever, there is still a lot of stuff we can do, you know, as a PA to help you with programs, with a lot of little things to keep you going, you know. And there is the thing with our union and how difficult it is, like every guy is totally different. Like, maybe a union of teachers of a union of in different jobs, they're almost kind of like in the same kind of like a range of salaries and situations. But with us, they're so different. Some guys make a crazy amount of money. Other guys, they only play for a year and maybe don't even make any. There is guys who got their businesses. There are other guys who never have anything, or there is injuries that they cannot do anymore. Guys can go overseas and get back. So there is a lot of situations. So it's a lot of like a personal situation and see where everybody is, how we can help, what are you interested in? Can we help you to be a coach? Can we help you to be in a front office? Can we help you to be whatever you want? Can you get you an internship somewhere? What are you interested in? And after, like you say, insurances or benefits or how to handle that after basketball. Because the good thing about, or the bad thing about our job is like, I'm 38, 39. I retire. So I still got 4 years ahead of me, hopefully, than I did playing basketball. And so there is, you got to be ready for a lot of years doing something else.
There's a big difference.
So that's what we try to teach the guys. Like, yes, you arrive, but we don't know how much money you're making. You don't know how much money you're going to be in the NBA or how much time you're going to be in the NBA. Let's be prepared. Let's be ready for that. This is, you know, so.
You can't play till you're 65, and 7-8-figure a year salaries are not going to be there, you know.
No, with basketball, it will be with whatever. With if you get things. Ready and if you prepare, you can get to that, but you got to work. It is not,
exactly.
not going to give you anything after basketball, like saying, hey, you, let's come here and I'll give you a 7-figure. No, you're going to be, do whatever. Like, I mean, there is a lot of situation and a lot of guys who got to start over and get back to college and will help you even get back to college. And you're going to have to start over. It was an amazing opportunity, but you got to realize, like, maybe
something
else. So there is so many guys, only 450 every year. Like you say, 60 of those, they're going to rotate at least every year. So now you got to make decisions and what you want to do with your career, G League or overseas, or maybe it's not basketball, it's being a coach or being something else.
When you're around some of these young guys, whether you give them advice or they ask you for advice, what, if you can just tell me that one piece of advice that you give to young guys.
I think there is two parts always. One is like, you control what you can control. Like, and what you can control is like, be professional, be on time, work hard, get better. That's your part. That's your job. That's what you can control. You cannot be worried about, I'm playing this or that, or I wanna, or that guy make that contract and I don't have that contract. That's, you cannot control that. You cannot be worried about more than just what you can control. And after in life, it's like, hey, you here, you got this contract. Don't start thinking about the second contract because we don't know if we can get there. So you got to go day by day. So you cannot think about, oh, I'm going to buy this because I'm going to, no. This is what you got. Just enjoy, have fun. It is an amazing opportunity. But don't rush. Just take it day by day. Every day, just go to bed thinking you are a better player, a better person. That's all you can do and keep having fun.
Lastly, you've doing some great work with UNICEF. You've got your foundation. Anything that you can share of stuff that is upcoming, some of the great work you're doing that we can spread the awareness. Just tell us about your foundation and the work you're doing with UNICEF.
Well, my foundation is completely like focusing in Spain, and it's focused about the kids because I'm thinking they are the ones who can change all these mistakes that we are making as a society. They are the one with education that we can let them know, and they can make their decision to have a better world and be more equal. Can we change all the, for example, the social justice we've been talking the last few months? Can we change that in a day? Can we change individually? Yes, you know, some of us we can, and we can think about it and we can start thinking, but it's about the education. It's about the next generation. It's about starting something to make that happen. So that's what we focus. We focus on, you know, healthy habits and doing exercise and kind of education for people who can. We building kind of like a play areas in hospitals with my foundation. We working with a school to talk about alcohol and drugs and stuff like that. So totally focused on them. We love it. It's been amazing, and we'll keep work on that to kind of like keep those kids educated and to do better, because I know they can do better than we did, and hopefully that's we don't have to talk about racial issues or whatever it is in the future. And after with UNICEF, they named me ambassador a few years ago. I think it's 6-7 years ago. So I'm just working to spread the word, and we can help all around the world. We can get the equal. Same thing is about kids. I have the I was lucky enough to wear in Lebanon last summer, and in Zambia before, and I'm being on site helping with the refugees on one side, with you know, water, and try to get better as a community there with the kids, and so it's been an amazing experience as well, and just trying to help any way I can. Always more focused on kids, because like I say, I think they're key on this to get better, and you know, always open to be able to join other organizations to help, and to just do whatever I can.
That's amazing. You know, the youth is the future, and if we can instill the right core values in them at an early age, they can change the world. So thank you for that, and so much respect for what you're doing in your communities and around the world. So it's amazing to hear.
Thank you very much.
You know, we finished every interview with three fun questions. Typically, I have a co-host, and my co-host wasn't able to make it today. So I'm going to try, and I'm going to ask you these questions. So don't think too hard. They're fun. The first question is, what TV or movie show most resembles your life?
I mean, now that because of what we talk today, I will say, let's say like Game of Thrones. So let's say something like that, because like we say about the NBA, you got to, you know, there is a lot of things. There is a big rotation. You got to keep working. You got to keep getting to something. And the prize was playing 14 years in the NBA. And so, I mean, yeah, it's a fight every day.
Okay. I like that. And what would be the name of your autobiography?
I mean, it could be Life of Numero 8 or something like that. I don't know.
I like it. I like it. That's perfect.
I don't know.
And who would play you in the movie?
You know, I'm going to say one because, you know, it came up a couple of times as like I look alike. And I don't remember his name, but I'm going to say this. The guy who do Modern Family.
Modern Phil. Phil, yes.
Okay. So that would be him doing Jose Calderon.
I love it. Well, Jose, you know, it's been amazing. We've spent an hour. I loved our conversation, and I'm so happy that you took time out of your day to join us today. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you, guys. It was great to have fun. Yeah, good luck to you guys. Anytime.